This is WTIC's Computer Talk with Tab, hosted by Eric Semmel and Dennis Halnan of Tab Computer Systems. Interact with Eric and Dennis by phone at 860-522-9842 or email them in the studio at gethelp@tabinc.com. Get help anytime at computertalkwithtab.com. Now, here are Eric and Dennis on WTIC News Talk 1080.
And we are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I am Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And we're here till 11 o'clock. And we are lucky enough again to have Associate Professor Ron Hira on the line. And Ron has been on, Professor Hira, sorry, I shouldn't be so familiar with your answer.
No, that's okay. You can call me Ron too.
Oh, very good. You've been on with our show before talking about H-1B visas, and our friends at Microsoft are in the news right now, because everyone's kind of up in arms about what's happening over at their Xbox division, where they're happily having the employees of Xbox train their replacements with H-1B visas.
Yeah, you know, Microsoft has been very active in lobbying government for the expansion of H-1B visas, and they've been known and spotlighted in a few cases where they've had really mass layoffs at the same time as hiring thousands of H-1B workers.
And that's what's happening in this case, too. And, you know, it's been a pet peeve of mine for a very long time, and I don't understand why we can't fix this. The last time we had you on, we talked about the administration's new approach to try to charge a higher fee to gain an H-1B visa to these customers, these companies. Have you heard anything new that's going on as far as our ability to regulate this a little more so that American workers are not losing their jobs to foreign workers in this way?
There's easily ability. You know, the question isn't ability to regulate. The question isn't. I mean, we know exactly what to do to fix this.
Mm-hmm.
It really is just a political will issue. It's the fact that there's billions of dollars at stake for the corporations, and that's really coming out of the pockets of workers. And so this is just a politics story more than anything else. Now, to give a little bit of credit, the administration has taken some steps to try to clean up bits and pieces of it, but it's been much more bark than bite. They haven't really taken the steps that are necessary to clean up the program. And that's not to absolve Congress, which is responsible also in ensuring that these policies are written the right way, the laws are written the right way. But the administration can do more. Congress clearly can do more and knows what the problems are, knows what needs to be done, just chooses not to, because this is really influence peddling. This is how your democracy, our democracy, operates right now. It's totally in favor of the moneyed interests.
Right. I mean, and these are, we talk about jobs Americans won't do and all this stuff that goes along with that connotation. These are jobs that we say are all about the STEM educations that we're supposed to be spending a premium for to get our kids educated. And then these dinglings are corrupt politicians are, like you said, taking the money, putting it in their pockets and not working for the American people. It's ludicrous to give away jobs like this that are all part of these. I mean, they talk the good language. Hey, STEM, get these kids all incorporated in science and technology and computers, and just to have them train their replacements 10 years later is just gross. And so when you say it's a political will thing, where can we as citizens push our quote unquote representatives to make a change here? What do we need to do here?
Well, yeah. So the public-facing branch of government is Congress.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that interact with the public the most. And so you've got to write emails to your legislators, so your congressional delegation. You've got to write to both your senators. I know Blumenthal's on the Judiciary Committee, Senator Blumenthal. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they have jurisdiction. That committee has jurisdiction over these issues.
Yeah.
They're aware of some of these issues, but until and unless his constituents, unless you guys start to write and put pressure on politicians, you know, look, they're happy with the status quo. They don't want to ruffle any feathers. They don't want to make any change. Stasis is what government is, at least the way our system is set up, is in favor of stasis, in favor of doing nothing. So until you're really pushed as a politician, you're not going to do anything because you're not going to stick your neck out and take any risks. So you've got to put pressure. You also have to put pressure on the media to report this, report these stories. It's not been picked up really in large newspapers like the New York Times or other mainstream press in the way that it should. And oftentimes the media reports false information about how the program operates. Just to give you one example, I talk to reporters all the time at all the major newspapers, the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, et cetera. And 99 out of 100 of them think that that employers have to look for American workers first before hiring an H-1B, and that H-1Bs are hired only when there's a shortage can be proved that there aren't Americans available. That's absolutely totally false, and it's so obviously false. Yet that's what people think, about the program. They have this false sense of how the program operates. And if you start with that frame that, these are the best and brightest foreign workers are coming in because they're filling gaps, as you said, that we can't fill. That's absolutely not how the program works. It works, an employer can prefer an H-1B over an American. They can replace an American worker with an H-1B. I mean, that's the furthest thing from a shortage that you can imagine. And if you just look at the labor market right now, as you know, in tech, it's a terrible job market, especially for younger workers who are recent college graduates in computer science. And that's been reported by the press widely in the Wall Street Journal and New York Times and Washington Post that, recent college graduates from computer science programs, from very good computer science programs, from good engineering programs, can't get jobs. And that's backed up by data from the New York Fed looking at unemployment rates for recent computer science, computer engineering graduates. So we have way more STEM workers, way more tech workers, American tech workers, who are not only able to do these jobs, they want these jobs, but they're being pushed out, not just by the H-1B program, but also by something called the OPT, the Optional Practical Training Program, which allows foreign students who graduate from U.S. universities to get jobs and get work permits in the U.S. They're crowding out all of the American recent grads. And by the way, we're graduating record numbers of computer graduates, of tech graduates, American tech graduates, and they're graduating into a terrible labor market, and they're being undercut by their own government by allowing cheaper indentured foreign workers to take those jobs.
So you made an interesting comment there as far as I have always understood it was they had to prove that there was a shortage.
Yeah, I thought so too.
And so in the old days, I swear that was the case, but maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was back then and it's changed now. So I'm going to take your premise to be the fact that they can hire whoever they want. And of course, media, I wouldn't consider Little Computer Talk with Tab to be media, but we've been talking about this for 30 years. Why other TV radio stations, they'll go to UConn and talk about, some of the dumbest things out there, as far as, a dance-a-thon. They'll have a dance-a-thon, story, but they won't talk about the fact that their American workers coming out of UConn's computer science department aren't getting jobs. This should be something that the universities are screaming to the newspapers, right? You're telling us you're marketing us to go ahead and get our kids these degrees, put them in massive debt because these degrees are already overpriced as it is. No offense to Professor Hira, who's in the business of selling degrees. And then to not have the universities say, hey, big corporations, you give us these handshakes that you want to bring our people in here. You're supposed to help us and you are begging us for these folks, and then you don't hire them. That should be kind of where the shame comes in, I would think. The universities should be shaming these companies into hiring their kids first.
Yeah, it's quite the puzzle, at least in the first order. You would think that the universities would care about their graduates and whether they're getting jobs or not. I certainly care about my students, and I help them get internships and try to get full-time jobs after they graduate. But in reality, the universities are complicit in the massive abuse of the H-1B program and the OPT. So not only are the universities selling degrees to American students, they're also selling the degrees to foreign students.
Right.
And they want to make sure that those foreign students can get basically access to the labor market. So when they go to India to recruit, and this is oftentimes what they'll do, is they'll go to India to my cousins in India, and they'll say, look, come to America, do this short-term master's program, and you'll get a three-year work permit on an OPT.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they're really selling is not the education, they're selling labor market access. So they become the gatekeepers. And so this is huge business for all of the universities, who I think are really askew. And I mean, it's a moral leadership problem
right.
from university administrators. And they've been on the front lines lobbying for more H-1Bs against the fee that we just talked about, against any of the reforms, the sensible reforms. For example, making sure that employers have to show a shortage before hiring an H-1B. They're dead set against any of that kind of reform. And they're very well organized. Universities have their their claws in the political process, because every congressman has a higher education institution in their district, and they want to point to it. So they do favors to those universities. So the universities are interested in selling these labor market access by selling these degrees that are basically visa mills in a lot of ways. They also want to perpetuate the myth that there's a shortage of STEM workers and STEM degrees, even though there's not. But all the evidence shows we have way more computer graduates than we need in terms of absorbing them in the labor market. They want to present that because they want research dollars, R&D dollars. And so they perpetuate these myths in the public, in the media, and also in the political system. It really is a very corrupt system, I'm sorry to say. I've been at this for 30 years. I live in Washington, and I'm in and around all of these kind of discussions at think tanks and in the halls of Congress. And the universities have they've been bad actors in this the whole way through.
Well, that's just depressing. But I'm not shocked at all. I appreciate your insights, because like you said, you're in the thick of things. Just to have people understand, if I'm an American worker working at Microsoft being replaced by an H-1B visa worker, what is the typical discount to the company who's hiring that H-1B visa worker as far as their labor?
Yeah, so typically there are wage rules, wage floors or minimum wages that government requires an employer to pay an H-1B worker.
Mm-hmm.
They're typically 20 to 40% below what an American worker would get, on the open market. So they're getting a 20 to 40% discount just on the face level.
Yep.
In terms of the wages. And by the way, Microsoft hires almost all entry level or junior level workers. So we know that from the data on the H-1B side. They're not hiring the super high level worker. We know from the wages that Microsoft pays and the wage levels that they choose, the skill levels, they're choosing people at the very entry, at the very basic level to fill H-1B roles. Those are roles that American workers can easily do, or American students can be trained to do easily. But instead, Microsoft prefers those because they can pay them less. But there's another discount so you're going to get a 20 to 40% discount. If you're an employer, it's a no-brainer. I'm going to go for the foreign worker. But on top of that, the cherry on top of that is that those workers are controllable. They're basically indentured to the employer,
right?
Because the employer holds the visa. They hold the status, the work status, and the legal status to stay in the country. The worker doesn't hold that power. And so that gives the employer a lot of power. So if I'm an H-1B worker, am I going to complain to my employer, Microsoft? You know, if I do, they'll say, well, we're going to terminate you. We're going to lay you off.
Yep.
Well, if I get laid off, I've got 60 days to go try to find another job, which is harder, even harder to do if you're an H-1B worker, or I have to leave the country. Now, I might have been here 6-7 years. I've got a house. I've got a family. I don't want to leave. the area. I don't want to leave the country, but I'll be forced to leave. So that gives a huge amount of leverage and power for Microsoft or any employer over the H-1Bs that they wouldn't have over an American worker. And so they're huge. This is really an employment story. And one of the things I always talk about with reporters, which they never get, is the H-1B is not an immigration issue. It's really a labor issue. It's a labor policy issue.
Right.
People like to think it's immigration, but it's actually a guest worker program. You don't have immigrant status. You're a guest in the country as an H-1B worker as long as you're working. You can't go and just quit your job and raise a family, whatever it might be that you want to do. You cannot stay in the country. You're a guest, but you're a guest at the employer's discretion. The employer can say, bye-bye, guest, you have to leave the country.
Right.
You don't have those choices. And that gives the employer automatic huge amounts of leverage and power. And, you know, all those tech companies love that because the way you get a raise if you're a worker is by switching jobs, right?
Yeah, right. Can't do that and here. Professor, can we take a quick break here and then get back to more of this?
Yep.
All right, we're going to take a quick break with Professor Hira from Howard University talking about the indentured servitude of H-1B visa workers. All right, we are back, and we're on with Professor Hira, who is talking about the indentured servitude of H-1B visa workers. So real quick before we come to the bottom of the hour, and I do want to hold you over after that as well, Professor, if it's okay. You were talking about the fact that these workers are locked into the company they got their visa from. And to your point, they're 20 to 40% less expensive as American workers that they've replaced. And they really can't complain to their new overseer because if they do, they're just going to be sent back to India.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, look, let's take a step back and say, you know, the problem here is not the workers themselves, right?
I mean,
they're being exploited.
I completely agree. That is exactly our point.
Yeah.
And this is bad for those workers, too, many of whom have been exploited.
Yes.
And are being exploited, but they don't really have a recourse. And look, they... So, and I've had cousins who've come over on H-1Bs, and, you know, people don't realize the salaries in India are much, much less. So you can hire a brand new computer graduate in India for about $7 an hour, right?
Yeah.
So even if they're underpaid, they come here to the U.S., and usually the ones who are coming to the U.S. have a couple of years of experience, but not a lot. They make it $70,000, $60,000, whatever it might be, right?
Yep.
But that's a lot more money than they would get back home.
Right.
And even if they only stay 5 years or 6 years, once they return back to Bombay or Delhi or wherever they might be from, when they return, they're going to get a wage premium because they've had the experience in the U.S. And all of the work that they're doing offshore in India are for U.S. clients, right?
Yeah,
The H-1B program also speeds up the offshoring of these jobs because you're basically training, instead of training recent U.S. graduates, you're training these Indian H-1B workers who then return home and take the knowledge and that work with them back to India. So the whole system is really...
We're going to hold you on over the break here. So one moment, we'll be right back with Ron Hira from Howard University. We are back, and we are talking H-1B visas with Professor Ron Hira of Howard University, and we've had Ron on before talking about this topic, and Professor Hira, you were talking a little bit about the indentured servitude of how these folks are 20 to 40% less costly when they're here working for American companies, then they're going to get trained up, and then they're going to end up going back to India, and instead of working for $7 an hour like they normally would have if they started out, they might get a premium over there to then work to outsource American jobs over there as well. So I would contend, based on what you're telling me, is these guys are very complicit in being abused. I mean, the abuse is very financially beneficial to the Indian worker and detrimental to the American worker, but it does seem like they're going to end up, even though they're being abused, much better off afterwards. Am I wrong?
No, I mean, their abuse is always in the eye of the beholder, right?
Yeah.
So from their vantage point, do I make 20 to 40% less in America than my $7 an hour back in India? I'm still making a lot more money than I would make back in India. So it's worth it. And in many cases, it depends on the company, but in some cases, they're not interested in immigration. They're coming here to work, to learn, to get paid a little bit more than they would back at home, and then also to learn the job and then bring those skills and get that wage premium back home. So they're sort of circulating through. They don't. They see themselves as just labor mobility. They don't see themselves necessarily as coming in as immigrants. There are others who do want to immigrate.
Yeah.
And for those folks, we actually make it very difficult because of the way our permanent immigration, what are called green cards, are backlogged in a big way. So if you're from India and your employer actually sponsors you for a green card for permanent residence, for real immigration.
Yep.
You might be waiting 25 years for your permanent immigration. And while you're waiting for that, you're on an H-1B. And so you're kind of in purgatory if they go through a mass layoff like at Xbox and Microsoft. You might be caught holding a bag. Then you're desperate to find another job. You get laid off. You got 60 days to stay in the country. You might have been here 10 years. What are you going to do? You're going to take whatever job you get just to stay. It didn't matter what the terms are, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of exploitation that goes on. There's vultures who go and prey on those people that are in vulnerable positions. So the whole system is rigged against workers, basically, both the H-1B workers and against American workers and American students.
Crazy. That green card comment is obviously designed on purpose so that the 25 years to figure out whether or not you're going to be a valuable American citizen, that's ridiculous considering all the other immigration things that we've been dealing with that I won't discuss because it has nothing to do with this program. But it does seem very crazy that you wouldn't want to make it easy for a foreign worker who does have skills to be American. That's what you want to have happen. Come and join our country and make it better and stronger with your skill sets and what have you. But no, 25 years to get a green card. I actually was at a bed and breakfast with my wife. I tell a story all the time, like 20 years ago now. And this British couple had owned the bed and breakfast for, I think, about 20 years. And our government was kicking them out because they were never able to get their permanent residency. It's nutty how we handle immigration here in America. So H-1B visas, there's really very little recourse for American workers, right? So if you find yourself training your replacement, what can an American worker do? What advocacy groups? Obviously they're congressperson, but those folks are still figuring out how to fix Social Security, I hear, let alone this type of problem. They really aren't very good at fixing any kind of real problem. So what does an American worker do when they find themselves replacing them, training their replacement? What can they do? Anything?
Yeah, they can and they should. Whether it will result in a positive outcome, I don't know. But what they can do is they can say, look, these employers are violating the promises they made on the H-1B application. So one of the promises that an employer makes is before hiring an H-1B or even renewing an H-1B, they have to pledge that they're not adversely impacting their U.S. workers. Well, if you're being laid off, you're clearly being adversely impacted, right?
Right.
That's about the worst adverse impact you could get.
Yep.
And so those American workers can and should complain to the Labor Department. It's called the Wage and Hour Division, and file a complaint. Now, what's happened is the Labor Department has never enforced that that promise, that pledge from the employers. They've never tried to enforce it to make sure that their employers are compliant with it. But now there's heightened scrutiny within the Trump administration. So Vice President J.D. Vance just came out and said, they're going to go after fraud. They've created a task force on fraud and specifically on H-1Bs. So the Department of Labor's Office of Inspector General was just on the media rounds. And give J.D. Vance, Vice President J.D. Vance, some credit. He actually understands the exploitation. And in fact, he's called out Microsoft in the past when a few years ago they had 9,000 layoffs. But again, it's all been bark and no bite. So unless and until American workers speak up and engage with the administration, engage with members of Congress, engage with the media, right? Because remember, Congress gets a lot of its information just by reading the news. And if the journalists don't cover
that's the whole problem.
Pay attention. And when I say the media, I'm including things like Twitter, like X, Facebook.
Yeah.
Get out there. If you're not out there vocal, those congressional staffers are paying attention to that stuff. If they don't see it, they don't know what's going on. So there's a lot of things that American workers can and should be doing Unfortunately, as you point out, there's no real organization representing American workers. You know, you've got labor unions, but the union density, the share of computer workers who are unionized is very, very small.
Right.
It's less than 1%. So the labor unions have been engaged, but they're not engaged in a significant and a serious way. And they're not able to bring all of those stories together to sort of organize tech workers in any way. So unfortunately, there isn't a good channel that way. Individual workers have to get engaged themselves. And if they've got local communities or groups and things like that, to get engaged through that. Just keep talking, keep pushing. That's what you can do. You've got an administration that claims that it's receptive to this. You've got to put the test to them. You got to say, are you really going to do something about this? You got to write, you got to tell your stories. If you don't, it's not going to happen. And get into the media, get into X. That's the reason why the administration is paying attention to this, is in part because there's been so much chatter on X on these issues.
It was interesting too. Like, if you even look on this particular story with Microsoft and Xbox, and you do that check, it's only like one news outlet that actually has it, and then there's a few others. The Indian Times seems to have it, but you don't find it anywhere else. I think Fox has it, but that's it. So what is it about our news medias that don't care about American workers, but they talk about power to the people all the time? It just seems so like an oxymoron to me. And you have our Congress people that are getting their news. They're getting their information from the news. That's just stupid in itself.
And they're getting their information from Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, that's frightening, too.
It can be, but at least you get more outlets and more voices. If you can get more voices, that's the problem. The news media is a filtered voice and a biased voice versus a Xbox or X or a Facebook, where you can at least have unfiltered voices. Now that they're not doing that like they did with COVID, they filtered the voices of anybody saying anything counter to the narrative. What I think Professor Hara is saying is use these channels yourself.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, there, of course, Congress is also getting a lot of information from, you know, corporate lobbyists and university lobbyists.
Right.
So they're only hearing that side in a formal way. So you've got to give them courage. You have to build up their courage.
Courage?
To go against
courage.
Interests. Well, I mean, the first thing I teach my students is, what do politicians want? Their first mission is to get reelected.
Yeah.
And so unless this is an election issue, they're not going to do anything, right?
Right.
Because there's so many powerful forces against it. And so you got to do this. Now, you asked about the elite media. Look, those people who are reporters at the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, which are really the two major outlets, and then even the business news like Bloomberg and the like, those reporters come from elite institutions.
Right.
They're living amongst the people. They don't live amongst ordinary people, even ordinary tech workers. They're living amongst the elite, and they don't know what's going on with regular people. And so they don't report on those things. And then, of course, they have an anti-Trump bias, a huge anti-Trump bias. So anything that the Trump administration does, even if it's in favor of workers, which these steps that they're taking on H-1B are absolutely in favor of workers.
Yep.
They're going to be anti-Trump. So they don't want to report on anything that makes the Trump administration look good. And I'm not the defender of the Trump administration. I'm just saying, hey, these are the facts about how the H-1B operations work.
Right.
And I tried to work with the Biden administration, and they made things worse. They expanded the H-1B program. They screwed over American workers. But the Trump administration is trying to take... But the media is going to take an anti-Trump approach.
Yeah, this has been a problem ever since we've been on the air for 30 years. We've talked about this issue. And that's when we, you know, this was a minor thing 30 years ago. Now it's just massive. And the fact that you think they don't know, I would believe you. But I think they know what's going on. I think someone's getting paid. It's always follow the money when it comes to these things. This stuff only works the way it does because someone's incentivized to be paid to do what they're doing. So I think there is definitely more understanding about what's happening, and they just don't care because they're getting paid. How they're getting paid is all, who knows? But people are getting paid, Ron, and it's not you and I.
Well, I mean, but you got to write to those reporters. You've got to write in the comment section, like, here's what's really going on.
Yeah.
You know, they've done these stories about how the labor market is terrible for recent college graduates.
Yes.
But they haven't connected that to the fact that we've got a, we're flooding the market with foreign workers, that same market undercutting our own kids. Right.
That's what I've been saying.
I got a kid in college too, and I'm teaching kids. You know,
right.
And they're graduating into a terrible labor market for recent college graduates, and including in tech. And we're still flooding the market with H-1B and OPT with hundreds of thousands. Most of the jobs are, I mean, in terms of job growth, most of that's going to those foreign workers. Because, again, if you're an employer, it's a no-brainer. I can pay the foreign worker less and I control them. Why would I hire an American worker? There's no reason to. At the same time, we've got this whole AI thing going on where, you know, employers, whether they're really getting productivity gains or not is unclear, but we know that they are trying to save money on labor. And so they're going to cut positions, particularly at the entry level.
Right. So as part of a university, how does a university market that they want to train kids in these areas and not, is there any requirement by the university to say, oh, by the way, you're going to get a degree and you're going to compete with the planet. Do universities have to offer a truth in advertising when it comes to the thing they're selling the student anymore at all?
No, there's been some efforts to try to give some more transparency to what the employment outcomes are. But look, you know, how many people know that, you know, even parents trying to pick majors and things like that for their kids, that kind of stuff is very wonky. And so it sort of exists. The quality of the data isn't great, but people aren't paying attention to that. Instead, they're listening to the cues, right, where the government actively promoted STEM degrees, right?
Right, right.
At the same time that they're trying to undercut them. Their graduates.
It's crazy.
It is kind of crazy.
Yeah, thank you. Well, yeah. It's nuts. We appreciate you being on our little program here in Connecticut and talking with us about this. It's a passion of mine.
Mine too.
And I think you've helped Connecticut workers understand this. It's not a surprise. Connecticut's definitely got some issues itself. So it's hard enough to be a IT worker here or any kind of worker here in Connecticut, let alone IT. Is there anything you want to bring up that I didn't ask you? We have to go to a break before I get yelled at by Carolyn. So I'm going to go to a quick break. But is there anything you want to bring up when we come back that we should talk about at all?
No, I think we should just talk about some of the practical steps. And it's been my great pleasure to join you. So.
Well, I appreciate it, sir. We're going to take a quick break and we'll talk about practical steps after this.
Good.
All right. So we are back. And we are, Dennis and I are just off air talking about this like crazy. And and we're talking about H-1B visas with Professor Ron Hira of Howard University. And Professor, again, really, really appreciate you joining us on the program. And you were wanting to talk about like practical approaches people can take to maybe fix this obviously easily fixable mess.
Yeah. So, I think the mess has solutions, and you've got to be writing again to your members of Congress, to the administration, but also to the media, as I said.
Right.
And, you know, there's things like when the Times or whatever newspaper, the Current, whatever you're reading, if you see a story about what the job market's like, if you see a story about, you know, these work visas, you know, write to the reporter or write in the comments. It's better to write directly to the reporter if you have an email.
Yeah.
And what you'll see is that oftentimes they're quoting people like immigration attorneys. And you would think an immigration attorney would be kind of an expert in work visas. But the reality is they have huge conflict of interest, right? So they make their money by selling work visas. And so every immigration attorney that gets quoted in the press, they are taking a stance that the H-1B is the greatest thing since sliced bread, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got to figure out what's going on, unfortunately, and that's on you. But if there's a mass layoff, for example, write to the reporter and say, hey, you know, have you looked into whether they're hiring H-1Bs, either directly or indirectly through a third-party outsourcing company or not? And so know some of your rights, but also, you know, flag these things so that they get attention. There's so many issues that are out there. Unless they get bubbled up and get attention from the lawmakers, the people who have power, and they have real power. They could fix this. We know exactly what to do. It wouldn't be that hard to do.
Right.
It's a question of you got to force people to do things, otherwise they won't do it. And hey, AI is coming, and those politicians have no clue what's going to happen to the job market with AI. And most of the employers really have no clue what's going to happen. But what they do know is that they're pouring billions, tens of billions of dollars into investing in AI with the expectation it's going to destroy a lot of jobs.
Right.
Whether that happens or not, we don't know. But we know that's sucking away capital. And so they've got to steal that money from somewhere. And the way they do that is cut costs, and the way they cut costs is cutting labor, right, and put
yep.
more work on people. So we're in the midst of a major shakeup in the labor market, one way or the other. And this is now the time that you got to put pressure on the politicians to take action now, not until it's too late.
Yeah, like I don't think they've ever done anything proactively to fix something. It's always too late, isn't it? It's always a crisis. I've never seen a problem solved that wasn't a crisis first.
Yeah, but the question is, how do you frame it as a crisis now?
And it is
becoming a crisis, right?
It is definitely becoming.
So there's real data that's out there that's showing it.
Well, I appreciate those thoughts and those ways that people can get involved, and we really do appreciate you joining us on this program. Please keep in touch if there's any changes with H-1B visas in the right direction, or if there's bad news, let us know.
Well, there's been some good steps. I mean, at least the Trump administration has admitted that there's a problem with these visas. They had an executive proclamation back in September talking about it, and they're in the process of doing some changes in terms of the rules.
Yeah.
So let's see. I'm cautious, very cautiously optimistic. I've got my fingers crossed that we've got some good rules that are coming soon that will have good steps in the right direction.
Well, Professor, we do appreciate your time today. Thank you so much for joining us. We do have to sign off, and we'll keep in touch, sir.
All right. My pleasure being on. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Professor Ron Hira, University of Howard University. We want to thank all you guys for joining us on this Saturday morning. Thank you, Carolyn, for producing. Mike G for posting everything.
And remember, we want you to be geeks too.
See you guys next Saturday.